The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Modern Maturity, and this is Karen Edwards speaking for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. We're going to start with an article from the AARP magazine about American women, generations of change. In recent decades, our society has seen a major evolution in women's rights and achievements. How has it all affected typical American families? When suffragettes won the right to vote 100 years ago, they thought full equality was right around the corner. They were wrong. And so, 50 years later, a second wave of feminism, embodied by a massive march in New York City, demonstrated for rights that were still being withheld, the right to get bank loans or hold credit cards without a man, the right to compete for traditionally male jobs and perform them without sexual discrimination or harassment, the right to plan their own families and craft personal lives in which they felt not only needed but fulfilled. Although the full equality that suffragists dreamed of has not yet arrived, women's personal and professional lives today have inevitably been influenced by this movement. To mark 100 years of the women's vote and 50 years of modern feminism, AARP interviewed three generations of women from families across the country. We wanted to know how their lives had changed from decade to decade and generation to generation. Though their stories are different, their message is the same. Women have more power than ever to live the lives they choose. We'll start with one that's captioned Career Options. A daughter lives her mother's professional dream. Mother, Mimi Nelson, sculptor and retired social worker, Sherman, Connecticut. Daughter, Judy Weinstock, obstetrician gynecologist, Sherman, Connecticut. Granddaughter, Eva Gerard, violinist and music teacher, Brooklyn, New York. And there is a lovely picture here of all three generations. Mimi, 97. From the time I was 5 years old, I wanted only one thing, to be a doctor. I would have gone to medical school, but there wasn't enough money. It was the height of the Depression. Judy, 70. Her father died when she was 15, and her mother didn't make enough money for tuition. Mimi, it was a tremendous disappointment because medicine captivated me, but there was also a gender expectation. When I was young, people would say, well, women don't do that, and women just accepted it, no questions asked. Judy, I probably thought about becoming a doctor because my mother was so invested in it, but even in the early 1970s, it was hard for a woman to get into medical school. Despite having good grades and putting out 26 applications, I wasn't accepted to any schools in the U.S. I ended up doing my first 2 years of medical school in Mexico before transferring to Baylor College of Medicine in Texas and becoming an obstetrician and gynecologist. When I first started practicing, all my partners were men, and a number of patients didn't want to be seen by a woman. But times soon changed. 10 years later, everybody was calling my office. They only wanted to be seen by a woman. Eva, 34. I also have an interest in women's health, being around my grandmother and mother. How could I not? But music won out. Judy, my boomer generation was all into all kinds of wide-ranging ideas and experiences. Today, for my younger patients, it's more about achieving the perfect everything from weddings to waistlines. Eva, more is expected of women today than ever before, especially in terms of motherhood. Today's mothers are expected to work, which is fantastic. But they're also expected to be there for their kids 100% of the time. There's so much pressure all the time. My grandmother told me, you can't rely on other people to do things for you. You have to learn to do things yourself. She gave the same advice to my mother, and that's why my mother can fix anything. The next group, gender roles, how partnerships have changed. Mother is Iris Sandler, a stay-at-home mother of four in Portland, Oregon. Daughter, Pat Sandler Welch, staffing agency founder and CEO, mother of two, Portland, Oregon. Granddaughter, Brooke Welch, laid-off art therapist, mother of one, Portland, Oregon. And the picture we have here is actually four generations. Iris, 93. Honestly, I never wanted personal power. I wanted a man who would take everything over. I had that with my late husband, whom I loved very much. He had to work to make a living for us. I didn't work, and I didn't want to work. I defined myself as a wife and mother above all. Pat, 70. I think it's easier to access confidence and personal power now than in the past. When I was at home with my kids and not working, I thought I was kind of a B+ or B- mom. I was a much better mom when I was working, when I could really feel satisfied at the end of the day. Then I could come home and give all my attention to my kids. Of course, after my divorce from my children's father, staying home wasn't an option anymore. I was a single parent when I founded my staffing agency. Brooke, who's 43. Having a mother who was very driven and work-oriented was inspiring. But I'm not as driven in that way. I don't really believe in having it all. My daughter, Frankie, is four, and I choose to stay at home with her for the first 2.5 years. Then I went back to work part-time, which was good for me in a way to get back into my field, but I lost my position because of COVID-19. Pat, after my dad died 8 years ago, I asked my mother to move cross-country to live with me. It was really all about her safety, but it turned out that I love having her living here. Brooke and her partner, Ryan, and Frankie have been living with us too, which has been such a delight. Iris, I no longer have anxiety about getting the virus. I realize how old I am. One of my other daughters also lives nearby, and I am enjoying my life with my kids and grandkids much more than I ever thought I would when I lived far away. I've loved being with them. We all have the same sense of humor. Brooke, when I'm listening to my mom and my grandmother and thinking about my own experiences, I realize we all had different ideas about what we could expect from life. For my grandmother, I think she had this vision of what she wanted for her life, and she made exactly that happen. For my mom, I think she also had a vision of what she wanted. She married young for love, then she adjusted based on her circumstances. She had her first child at 27, and I had mine at 38. I had already gone through my first big love, and I feel pretty pragmatic by the time I chose the partner I chose. I looked for someone who would be a good co-parent, who would be committed to me and to raising our family. I think I was a little more strategic than either my grandmother or my mother. Pat, one of the lessons I got from my mother was that I tried to pass on to my kids was that bad times will pass. When things were challenging or difficult in my life, my mother would say to me, Pat, your life is a long book. This is but a chapter. You don't know the end of the story. There's several more of these adventures in this article, but we're going to move on for now, and I'll go back to those next time. So let's move on to an article from the Essential Retirement Guide. How important are taxes when deciding whether to move? The right location can help you avoid excess taxation. When you're retired and living on a fixed income, it's important to get an accurate analysis of the true cost of living in your desired location, including state and local taxes. You'll want to stretch your savings as far as you can, so paying particular attention to tax efficiencies is critical. Taxes vary widely by state and locale. For example, Washington State does not have a broad-based income tax, which means retirees don't have to pay income taxes on their pensions, Social Security benefits, or other retirement income. However, combined state and local tax rates, there are some of the highest in the nation, up to 10.5%, and property taxes are steep. When deciding whether to move or stay put, take a close look at these five types of taxes. State income tax. Stay up to date on income tax rates and how they will affect different forms of retirement income, such as Social Security, retirement accounts, and other investments. 9 states, Alaska, Florida, Nevada, New Hampshire, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Washington, and Wyoming, do not have individual income tax. Of the states that do levy income tax, the number of brackets varies. For example, Alabama has a 3-bracket income tax system ranging 2 to 5%. California has 10 tax brackets that range from 1 to 13.3%. Local taxes. Some states allow cities, counties, and municipalities to level local income taxes. While some are permanent, others are temporary and fund specific projects for education, community improvements, and parks. Each state has different local tax rules, from flat rates to income-based rates, that may exempt some retirees, depending on their fixed income. If you're planning to relocate to the District of Columbia or one of these 15 states, Alabama, Arkansas, Colorado, Delaware, Indiana, Iowa, Kentucky, Maryland, Michigan, Missouri, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Oregon, or Pennsylvania, just make sure to look into local taxes before you go. Social Security tax. Social Security benefits are a guaranteed form of income that can help cover your recurring and variable expenses. There are 13 states in the country: Colorado, Connecticut, Kansas, Minnesota, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, New Mexico, North Dakota, Rhode Island, Utah, Vermont, and West Virginia, that apply taxes to Social Security. If you move to one of these states, plan on having some of your Social Security income go to taxes, which will reduce your monthly check. That said, if your only source of retirement income is Social Security, some states offer an exemption. Property tax. If you're planning on buying a home in another state, evaluate property taxes closely. Many states that don't have income taxes make up for it with high property taxes. Some states offer property tax relief programs for older individuals or those with limited income or disabilities. Every program has different qualifiers, so assess each one carefully. If you're set on moving to a high property tax state, consider whether renting may be a cheaper alternative to owning and paying taxes. There's inheritance tax. It never hurts to plan for the future, so consider state rules on inheritance tax as well. Currently, only 6 states collect inheritance tax: Iowa, Kentucky, Maryland, Nebraska, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. If you live in one of these states, your beneficiaries may have to pay taxes on the assets you pass down to them, though the threshold at which those taxes kicks in varies widely. Fortunately, spouses are tax-exempt when it comes to inheriting property, and only Nebraska and Pennsylvania collect inheritance taxes on property passing to children and grandchildren. Understanding state and local taxes can help you anticipate what will work for you financially in the decades to come. Whether you decide to move to a new state or continue enjoying the opportunities in your current location, it's always beneficial to know your options. One last piece of advice: If you decide to relocate, make sure you clearly establish residency in your new state. Obtain a driver's license or a state-issued ID. Change your address on important documents. Register to vote. Open an account with a local bank. Register your car. Buy or rent property and file a resident income tax return. These steps will help your case should your former state try to collect taxes after you have moved. And we have two pro tips with this article. Some states levy income taxes on Social Security income, while others don't. So be sure and check the rules where you're planning to move. And consider estate and inheritance taxes if you're hoping to leave a significant amount of assets to your loved ones after you die. Now we're going to look at an article from Health Immunity magazine. Exercise lowers stress, which helps your immune system function better. Quote, I do everything right, so why do I keep getting sick? It could be genetics. It could be the environment you grew up in. But there's plenty you can do to help your immune system function at its best. This article is by Jacqueline Andriakos. As someone who writes about women's health, I practice what I preach. I get 7 to 8 hours of sleep most nights. I make it to my favorite workout classes regularly, and I make sure to get in all my servings of fruits and vegetables every day. Well, okay, I leave room for wine and dessert, too. Yet every year I manage to come down with several colds, bouts of strep throat, and stomach bugs. I even got shingles a few years ago. My burning question, why is my immune system so weak? The short answer is, it's possible that some people have naturally stronger immune systems than others. I have some perfectly healthy patients who get 5 to 6 upper respiratory infections, aka the common cold, or more rarely, full-blown influenza, a year, and others with the same health profile who hardly ever get sick. Holly Phillips says, an internal medicine physician in New York City, she is, and the author of Exhaustion Breakthrough, It Doesn't Seem Fair, and Honestly, It's Not. On the flip side, some individuals are also thought to be especially resistant to certain bacterial and viral infections. Immunologists refer to them as having super immunity. And their genetic makeup is the focus of an entire field of research, Dr. Phillips says. Your immunity is determined by several factors. Genetics plays a large role, says Paolo Buffetto, MD, professor of medicine, hematology, and medical oncology at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City. Immunological genes are many and complex, and your immune response depends on their combined performance, Dr. Buffetto explains. Experts also believe that you build up immunity while you are young, or possibly even before you are born. There are factors during infancy and childhood, and perhaps also in utero, that contribute to the development of the immune system. But they are not fully understood, Dr. Buffetto says. What's more, environmental factors such as pollutants and toxins may also weaken your immune system over time. One standout theory for why some people just may be more susceptible to illness is the hygiene hypothesis, the idea that the more bacteria and viruses you come into contact with as a child, the smarter your immune system becomes. The thinking is, keeping kids extra clean and smothering them in hand sanitizer may cause more harm than good in the long run. On top of that, lifestyle factors including stress, obesity, heavy alcohol drinking, and poor hygiene can all weaken your immune system and lead to more frequent infections, Dr. Buffetto notes. How to strengthen your immune system? Just because your immunity is not something you can entirely control doesn't mean you should abandon your early bedtime or start loading up on junk food. nutrients from fruits and veggies like zinc, iron, and vitamin C are essential for a healthy immune system. Dr. Phillips says, as are omega-3 fatty acids. Omega-3s found in fatty fish like salmon also encourage the production of lymphocytes, immune cells that are the front line of defense against infections, she explains. And it's better to get your immune protective nutrients through food than through supplements, she adds. Getting plenty of sleep and exercise does, in fact, help boost your immune system, whether it feels like these healthy habits are working in your favor or not. Exercise improves circulation. Increased circulation boosts the production of germ-fighting antibodies. Dr. Phillips explains, exercise also lessens stress, which helps your immune system function at its best, she says. Sleep is a health restorative time for the body. When you sleep, your body releases immune proteins called cytokines, which help fight infections and control the body's response to stress, Dr. Phillips says. So, a lack of sleep can lead to an underproduction of cytokines and other protective immune cells, leaving you more vulnerable to infections. Now, from AARP, the magazine, the night John Lennon died, December 8, 1980. Imagine John Lennon at 80, the smart beetle, the witty one, the Liverpool lad whom young guys wanted to be and moms worried about. 40 years after his death at 40, we mark the date and celebrate the musical genius who gave peace a chance. This article is by David Hockman. And there are quotes from a number of folks. We may not get to all of them, but we'll give them a start. Alice Cooper, I remember painting a house when I was 15 years old, and the radio was always on. We were used to the Four Seasons and the Beach Boys, and all of a sudden we hear, "She loves you, yay, 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 and I want to hold your hand." These Beatles songs were different than anything we had ever heard. I'm not kidding when I say it changed our whole direction in life. My three best friends and I instantly said, we need to start a band. John, Paul, George, and Ringo. They basically started every band you hear today. John and I became great friends later on, even though we were polar opposites. He was outspoken and loved politics. I loved horror and comedy and thought music should be an escape from current events. But what fun we had. We were like two midnight vampires at clubs like Max's Kansas City in New York and the Rainbow in L.A. Harry Nilsson would be there too, and Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees and Bernie Taupin. But John was the most electric, the most fascinating, the James Dean of rock. The one unwritten rule we had tells you what an interesting musician John was. We never talked about music. The day he died, I had the house at the top of Benedict Canyon in L.A. My next-door neighbor was Elton John. I had one of those early big-screen TVs, and some guys from my band were writing a song with me when the news came on. John Lennon is dead. I swear. There was like a vacuum in the room. Everybody just got up and left and didn't say a word. Honestly, it was like your parents dying. Like, hey, your mom and dad just got killed in a plane crash. You couldn't digest it. The next day, almost every musician I knew started carrying a piece. I had a little .22 caliber Walter PPK, and everybody had some sort of weapon, just in case. We didn't know if John's death was part of a conspiracy or what, because, gosh, if they could get John Lennon, the high priest of rock and roll, they could get any of us. Our innocence was gone. The loss was irreparable. That was the day music died. And this from Jane Pauley. If you look on YouTube, you'll find the NBC special on John Lennon I anchored that week. professional Jane was really trying to hold it together, but the girl inside me was losing it. I remember on the Today Show, the morning after John died, Tom Brokaw and I ended up with an extended montage under the song Imagine. The second we wrapped, I started sobbing. An AP photographer caught the moment, me with my head in my hands, Tom looking like he didn't know what to do when a woman is crying. I was in eighth grade when I saw the Beatles at the Indiana Fairgrounds Coliseum. Though I couldn't actually see or hear them, I was in the back of the rafters and the screaming was nonstop. The day John died, I felt my youth had been put in a box and that box was closed. The generational attachment was that profound. That night in 1980 feels so long ago now, but the memory is so precious. My husband, Gary Trudeau, the Doonesbury creator, and I agreed recently that the closest thing we have to our song is John Lennon's Woman. I can't drive by the Dakota to this day without thinking about it. And we'll continue with those comments next time. Now to fill out our time. This time I want to give you a few just snapshots through the ages about women's issues. June 7th, 1965, end of birth control bans. States can no longer outlaw contraception in marriages. September 7th, 1968, Miss America protest. Feminists congregate on Atlantic City to demonstrate against beauty contests. August 26, 1970, women's strike for equality. More than 50,000 women across the country march for equal rights. June 23, 1972, sports get support. Title IX opens opportunities for female athletes in federally funded schools. January 22, 1973, Roe v. Wade decided. The Supreme Court rules that a woman has the right to terminate a pregnancy. September 20, 1973, the Battle of the Sexes. Billie Jean King beats the former top player Bobby Riggs in a highly publicized tennis match. October 10, 1974, charge it. Congress makes it illegal to deny credit cards based on sex or marital status. Well, folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.